From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A federal judge has just signed off on the purging of hundreds of thousands of registered voters in Georgia, the same state where massive voter suppression efforts just a year ago helped propel a Republican governor into power. Many of the registered voters are simply removed from the rolls because they have not voted in years. Others have out-of-date addresses. Stacey Abrams, the charismatic gubernatorial candidate who lost narrowly last year, is challenging the voter purges. The news from Georgia comes days after Wisconsin was shedding voters that could impact the Democratic Party. And an Associated Press review of Ohio's absentee ballots found widespread application denials. Joining me for a look at the latest Republican-led voter suppression efforts is Cliff Albright, the co-founder of Black Voters Matter. He's a radio host, writer, consultant, and social justice activist. Welcome to the program, Cliff.
Hi, thank you.
So, of course, Georgia, last year in particular, was sort of ground zero for the voter suppression efforts aimed particularly at Black voters who were excited about the prospect of catapulting into power for the first time a progressive female Black governor, Stacey Abrams. Brian Kemp was state secretary, so he was overseeing the exact same. He was overseeing the election that he was running in. He ended up winning narrowly. Are you surprised that Georgia's at it again?
No, not surprised at all. It's pretty much what many of us predicted last year. We knew that if he was allowed to get away with stealing an election last year, that it would become or reinforce a playbook that had already been in place, and that it would expand, that we'd see it again here in Georgia, and that we'd see similar things going on in other states.
So explain what exactly is the basis for this voter purge. I understand that Georgia is one of several states that has this use it or lose it law.
Exactly. And so it's estimated to be over 300,000 names that are going to be purged from the voter rolls here in Georgia. Out of that, I think it's between 100, maybe 120,000 that can be directly attributed to the use it or lose it, which is this notion that if you fail to vote over a certain number of election cycles, and various states have different definitions. You know, there was a Supreme Court case dealing with Ohio not too long ago, but that if you fail to vote within a certain number of cycles, that you can be removed from the rolls. So in other words, if you fail to use this right to vote, that you will lose this right to vote. And it's the only right. You know, if you go through the Constitution and just go through the first 10 amendments, go through the Bill of Rights, go through all the amendments and just, you know, name me a right that you where you use it or lose it. Like if you have freedom of religion, if you fail to go to church within a certain amount of time or a certain number of years, do you lose your rights of freedom of religion? If you have freedom of speech, but you fail to speak out, whether it's speaking out against the government or otherwise, if you don't use it over a certain period of time, do you lose that right? But with voting, it's somehow become acceptable that if you use it, you can lose it. And we really have to take a look at this and see it for what it is, right? Not see it as just an issue of election or bureaucratic efficiency, but view it for what it is. It's a voter suppression effort designed and targeted to certain populations, largely black and brown populations, young voters and others. And it's being used very strategically, as the court in North Carolina said, with surgical precision.
So, in fact, the last time we had you on, it was to talk about North Carolina. But so just to clarify, you can be a registered voter in Georgia. That means you've taken the trouble to register to vote, which in and of itself is a barrier. You know, if you're eligible, you would imagine you'd automatically be registered. But you take the trouble to register to vote. And for various reasons, you haven't made it out to actually vote in an election since 2012, which is the cutoff date, it appears, for this particular voter purge that impacts 120,000 voters. And then a judge decides, or the judge in this case has decided, that means that you lose that right to, your registration is no longer valid. So in order for you to then regain that right ahead of the 2020 election, you have to re-register to vote, right? So how do you know you've even lost it to begin with?
Exactly. And that's part of the problem, that people don't know, that people don't get notified unless they are taking the step to proactively check, which is something that we and many of our partners, definitely Fair Fight and organizations like New Georgia Project, are encouraging folks to do. Like, it doesn't matter how long you've been registered, or really even how regularly and religiously you've been voted. We've seen people who have voted on a regular basis still get removed because of this so-called use it or lose it. And so we're encouraging everybody and providing mechanism, providing links and outreach so that people can check their registration status, because the Secretary of State isn't letting people know affirmatively that they're the ones who have been purged. So yes, you have to find out if you're still on, and then you've got to go through the step of re-registering. And so literally the very state that is putting up all kinds of voter suppression obstacles, right? Whether it's miscommunication about voting days or closing polling places, which we've also seen here in Georgia, or cutting back on early voting hours, they create all these barriers that keep certain populations from voting. And then they double penalize certain populations by saying, because you haven't voted, because you've succumbed to all these voter suppression efforts, guess what? Because you haven't voted, we're now going to take you off the rolls to begin with, forcing you to now go through all those hurdles that you mentioned just to get re-registered.
So the other, so out of the 309,000 approximate number of voters that are being purged, 120,000 will lose their right because of this use it or lose it. The other remaining number of voters that are going to be purged, it's, I understand, because the state has determined that they've moved out of Georgia, or that mail sent to their address was returned, essentially bounced back. Again, this seems to be not very reliable way of determining whether someone should remain registered.
Exactly. And it's targeted to populations that we know that are transient populations, younger populations, economically challenged populations. And we also know that some number of those folks may have received the mail, or it may have been returned for a variety of reasons that have nothing to do with whether or not they're even still at the address. So just from top to bottom, whatever the reason is, whether it's these as so-called address changes or it's the use it or lose it, we know that it's targeted at certain populations. We know that it's highly unreliable. We know that there have been some numbers each year that they do this, some number of duly registered voters who still get removed, folks who have been actually voting. And so the entire process is really borderline fraudulent. And again, we know that it's being targeted. We know what it's being used for. And we know that it simply isn't consistent with the notions that we have of what American democracy is supposed to be, that we have offices like Secretary of State's offices that are supposed to be fighting to expand access to voting. But what we are seeing is that they are regularly being used, particularly in certain states, to cut off access to voting, and it's being done strategically.
So how do these strategic voter purges actually target, in particular, Black voters? You mentioned that, of course, those voters who might not have a permanent address, such as young people, economically challenged folks, they are being targeted in that way. But are Black voters, as far as you can tell, also being singled out, mostly because they're also reliably Democratic Party voters?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the suspicion, is that there is some racial tracking going on. It's done through a variety of ways, but part of it is done through using variables, how often you move or some of these other factors, whether or not you voted in and of itself has some racial tracking to it because of the various racial obstacles that are put up. But there are various variables that are used that we know have the impact of being racial. But then on top of that, you also have strongly suspected that there's also some specific racial targeting going on, that you have decisions being made. And we see this in other aspects of how the Secretary of State's office, both under Brian Kemp, previous current, illegal governor, and the previous Secretary of State, as well as the current Secretary of State, where they routinely target certain communities. They target Black communities, they target Black organizations, they target or organizations that mobilize Black voters, they target Black activists in some cases. And so there's a strong suspicion that in addition to these other variables, you know, how mobile you are, economic status, et cetera, that there's also some racial targeting going on, some specific explicit racial targeting going on.
Now, let's talk about Wisconsin. I know that your organization primarily focuses on the South, but Wisconsin is a critical swing state, one that Donald Trump won by just a few tens of thousands of votes in 2016. And a day or two before the Georgia decision, we heard about Wisconsin purging hundreds of thousands of voters off of the registered voter list. Is this part of the same pattern?
Exactly. It's part of the same pattern, both in terms of what they're doing, but also where they're doing it. You know, they do this largely in states where they know they don't have to suppress every vote, but they know that if they can target a certain percentage of the electorate, and if they can target in a way where this has a disparate impact on certain populations, Black voters, brown voters, young voters, right, metropolitan area voters, they know that if they can get a certain percentage, that they can tilt an election. So like you said, in Wisconsin, where we're talking about a couple of hundred thousand voters being purged, this is in a state that Trump won by only, 23,000 votes?
Yeah.
And so if you can target states like Wisconsin, if you can target states like Georgia, which is a battleground state and which could very easily be moved depending on who the nominees are this year, if you target states like this and you get a certain percentage that you can remove, then you can impact the presidential race.
So we also saw another story in Ohio about absentee ballots. Ohio, another swing state, also in the Midwest. Of course, an Associated Press review found that when Ohio voters applied for absentee ballots, they were denied on a pretty widespread level. Absentee ballots are becoming an increasingly popular way of casting ballots, particularly people who think either they might be out of town or it's hard for them to get to a voting place or a polling place. Do you see that also as potentially targeting voters that tend to vote Democratic, i.e. low-income people of color, students, seniors, etc.?
Exactly. I mean, and this has always been an area where conservatives have tried to target, Black activists and Black voters who are increasingly trying to use the absentee vote process. You know, you think back, Jeff Sessions became famous on a national scene first because of when he was a prosecutor, when he was a U.S. attorney in Alabama. He tried to prosecute some Black activists because they were mad that these activists had used the absentee voting process, that they had done all this outreach and gotten all these Black voters to use that process and to start winning elections. Here in Georgia, in Quitman, there was some activists who were targeted because of the same thing. They were prosecuted on allegations of voter fraud involving absentee ballots. And so there's a growing recognition that, you know, Black communities and Black activists and Black voting organizations are effectively using this method, just like we're getting more effective at using early voting, right? And so as we use some of these techniques and methods that were designed to expand access, early voting, absentee voting, the more we use this, the more that we see conservatives getting concerned and scared about it and trying to, you know, come after activists and then trying to cut back on the ability to use the absentee voting process.
Let's talk about how there are efforts to restore people's right to vote, the sort of bright side of the story. In states where Black voters have pushed for the election of Democratic governors, you do see the results of Democratic governors trying to restore voting rights. In particular, in Kentucky, we've seen now newly elected Andy Beshear, a Democrat for governor, signed a law restoring the right to vote for former felons convicted of nonviolent crimes. And of course, because of our racially discriminatory criminal justice system, this can impact primarily or disproportionately Black voters. Do you see this as a bright lining? And how important is what Kentucky has done?
Yes, it's definitely bright lining. It's definitely important. As a candidate, Governor Beshear had said that that would be one of his earliest actions. So we're glad to see that he's kept his promise on that. And so it does have the potential to restore, you know, thousands, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of voters to the voter rolls, and to benefit them in other ways, right? Just in terms of making them feel whole, right? Because it's not just about formerly incarcerated persons as voters, but also about as returning citizens. And so it's definitely good news, but we've got to remain vigilant because we see even when these things happen, like as we saw in Florida, that you saw that they tried to peel away at some of the promise of such a victory, like with Amendment 4 and the restoration of voting rights in Florida, where they then, the state legislature, the Republican legislature came in and said, oh, but you've got to pay your fines and fees. And so they know that things like that, the economic, adding the economic level, is going to, again, have a disparate impact on Black returning citizens trying to get their right to vote back. In Louisiana, which also saw a major victory in terms of restoring voting rights, we've also seen that what they can do is they can create just confusion around the process. So in Louisiana, you have a Republican Secretary of State who has done nothing to give clarity or to issue regulations to direct the parishes in Louisiana and the registrars in each of those parishes on how this process is supposed to work. So you've still got folks who technically have had their rights restored, but because of all the confusion with the process, haven't really been able to be that aggressive at getting those rights restored. And so even though the step in Kentucky is definitely a step in the right direction, we've still got to be careful that the other side is learning and using all these different dirty tricks to make sure that even when rights are restored, that not everybody really gets the benefit from that equally.
I want to just jump back to Florida briefly, because that was a huge victory for voting rights advocates. The ballot measure that allowed former felons to have their right to vote restored. And so then, essentially, as you said, Republicans in the legislature attempted to force former felons to be, to have these financial hurdles. They would have to pay off all of these, you know, many would say unfair fees as part of their incarceration or related to their incarceration in order to get their right to vote. I mean, isn't that just a modern day poll tax?
Exactly. It's a modern day poll tax, and they know exactly what the impact is going to be. And it's one of those things where, you know, in a lot of these states, when you see these movements going on, you've got this strange, apparently strange coalition of progressives, but also conservatives that are sometimes fighting to have some kind of reform in terms of restoration of voting rights. Because the reality is this, it's not just Black and brown folks who have felony convictions who are impacted. You do have, although it's disproportionate, you've got some number of white folks who also have these felony convictions, right? White folks commit crimes too. And so the reality is that you've got these strange alliances to get the voting rights back. But then after the fact, when you start seeing some of these attacks, when you start seeing some of these methods to narrow down who's able to actually benefit, all of a sudden, some of those alliances, some of those allies that were there to get the laws changed aren't there quite so much when it comes to making sure that law has an equal impact on all communities. And so that's something that we've got to keep our eye on. I think that's something that's definitely played out in Florida.
That surgical precision comes back, picking and choosing which voters you want to re-enfranchise. Let's turn also to Louisiana that you mentioned. I understand that your organization, Black Voters Matter, was deeply involved in the election that took place just recently that led to the victory of the Democratic governor, John Bel Edwards. Was that victory in part spurred by the re-enfranchisement of voters, disproportionately Black voters, but you know, Democratic Party leading voters in general?
Right. I would say definitely yes. I'd say, and I can give a personal testimony. When we were in Louisiana, and before I say anything, I want to lift up our partners there in Louisiana, you know, organizations like the Power Coalition, organizations like Vote, Voice of the Experience, that did an incredible job of mobilizing Black voters, which at the end of the day was what made the difference in that election, that very close election. And so I would definitely say that this issue of restoration of voting rights was important. Just as a personal testimony, when we were there on the ground on election day, we had somebody come on our bus who had actually just recently had her voting rights restored because of the change in the law that had taken place in 2018. And she said that she was passionate about going out and mobilizing voters to support John Bel Edwards because she saw that he was supportive in regards to restoration of voting rights and also on some other criminal justice reform issues. So real people were impacted by that. Now we have some challenges with Governor Edwards, obviously on a bunch of other issues, including reproductive justice, right? But on this issue, there were folks who were impacted. It did motivate some folks to make sure that they went back out and turned out the vote. And at the end of the day, an election as close as it was, in fact, an election where after the general election, he was actually trailing. He in the Democratic tally was behind the Republican tally in the general election. So when we went to the runoff, there were many people who thought it was going to be impossible for him to win, even as an incumbent. But Black folks came out in record numbers. Even during early vote, Black folks came out in numbers which rivaled, in fact, surpassed numbers that we hadn't seen since 2008 when Barack Obama first ran. And so we need to be clear that Black voters made a difference in that election, that Black organizing, Black-led organizations made the difference in that election. And yes, this issue of criminal justice reform and restoration of voting rights and the number of people that did have their voting rights restored, not as large as we want it to be, but that community has played a part in getting a victory like that.
And I think that's such an important, critically important point because our next election, the 2020 election, you know, may so easily go the way of the 2016 election because of our electoral college system, where you just need to win more voters in just the right states in order to catapult a person who may lose the popular vote into the presidency. And so it seems as though Republicans are frantically, you know, rather than actually running on a platform that the majority of Americans might back them for, continue to be on this trend of suppressing Democratic voters or voters that tend to vote for their rivals as their, you know, one of their main methods of preserving political power. Are you worried about 2020?
Definitely worried about 2020, and not so much because of wondering, like, in terms of the real numbers, who has the most support, but because of this issue that we're talking about, because of voter suppression, because of the machines themselves, right? I mean, we're seeing in states where they're using and, in fact, deepening use of the machines that leave no record of the vote, where there's no paper trail, right? And so you've got a movement of folks saying, look, we need to be going universally to hand-marked paper ballots because it's the only way that we can really get a trail. You know, we've seen instances of folks going in. Some of your viewers and listeners may have seen videos of people going in and voting for a particular candidate and on one of these digital machines and literally seeing somebody else pop up. And so this combination of issues of these machines, which are by definition hackable, combined with the more traditional voter suppression tactics, right? The things we've been talking about, the purging of the voters, the closing of the polling place, the cutting back on the hours. When you put this mix together, what you have is a situation which at the heart is, and you alluded to this, when you've got a majority population, which is about to no longer be the majority in a majority rule system, then they try to find ways to hold on to the power that they've had during the period when they were a majority. If this was happening in another country, right, we'd be able to easily identify this for what it is, a majority group that is no longer going to be the majority, which is trying whatever it can to hold on to power, including illegal efforts, right? If this was someplace else, we'd be very clear about what's going on. But because we still got this mystique of America exceptionalism, like somehow America's beyond that level of corruption or beyond that level of power grabbing or beyond that level of weakening a commitment to democracy, because we've got these notions, we've got people that are trying to struggle to understand what's going on and calling it other things, calling it just, you know, administrative effectiveness to clean up the voter rolls. No, it is what it is. It's just outright voter suppression and a desperate attempt for one group to hold on to power that they are increasingly losing.
Cliff, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sure we'll be having you back on between now and the next election. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Cliff Albright, co-founder of Black Voters Matter, radio host, writer, consultant, social justice activist. We've been discussing the latest voter suppression efforts led by Republicans. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.